And our next speaker is Dr. Brad Ivanoff. Dr. Ivanoff is a professor of medicine at Washington University in St. Louis. His research interests are prevention of occupational injuries and musculoskeletal disorders, particularly in construction industry.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk today about the results of an intervention to improve fall prevention behaviors and reduce falls among apprentice carpenters in St. Louis. And I wanted to thank our collaborators at Washington University and at Duke University, as well as the Carpenters District Council of St. Louis and Vicinity, which is the Carpenters Union, and the Carpenters Joint Apprenticeship Program, which is a joint program funded by the union and by construction carpenters. So we had excellent access to work sites and to carpenters through this. Funding for the project came through CPWR, which is the construction center that's been funded by NIOSH. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So fall fatalities in construction. So falls are the leading cause of fatality in construction, so accounting for about 35% overall of the more than 1,200 deaths that occur annually in construction. It's particularly a problem for residential construction. This is home building, and particularly among framing carpenters in residential construction, where it accounts for about two-thirds of the deaths, also accounts for the vast majority of hospitalizations and severe injuries in this group. Younger workers are at higher risk of injury, and this is one of the few sources of mortality in occupational health that has actually been increasing over time rather than decreasing. So residential construction is particularly dangerous and problematic, in large part because of the way that it's set up. The work environment is ever-changing. So if you have a house, you may be building it in 2 or 3 weeks. Every single day presents a different landscape and a different environment in which to work. Work crews are often small and dispersed, making it hard to do centralized interventions. Many workers are inexperienced and are at higher risk of injury. There's an increasing immigrant face in this industry. And Hispanic workers have been shown to have a much higher injury rate than Anglos. Most contractors are very small and don't have the resources to hire safety professionals. Safety innovation in residential construction lags behind commercial construction. The recent collapse in housing market has exacerbated the problem of high competition, very low margins of profit in this industry, and a real rush to produce, which sometimes means cutting corners on safety. There's also a problem of unclear safety standards. Residential carpenters are not covered by the OSHA fall protection regulations. They're covered by a residential construction guideline. And if you saw the movie Pirates of the Caribbean, you know there's a difference between rules and guidelines. So what I'm going to present on today is a three-part project. We're going to sort of fly through parts in one and two, which were the evaluation and baseline data development, but interspersed through the talk are the references to the papers that have come out of that if you want to see more of the data, and then want to get to the payoff, which is the post-intervention evaluation portion. So this three-part project, the first was to conduct a comprehensive needs assessment of the current fall protection training for apprentice carpenters. Step two is to develop and implement curriculum changes in response to the gap analysis that was done in stage one. And then step three was to evaluate the effectiveness of this curriculum intervention on changing attitudes, knowledge, and work behaviors among apprentice carpenters. So in phase one, which was the comprehensive needs assessment, we looked at the current fall prevention training within the Carpenters Apprenticeship Program. So the carpenters in St. Louis, about 90% of them are unionized. They go through a 4-year apprenticeship program where they spend about 4 weeks per year at the apprenticeship training school. And it's primarily skills training, but also interspersed with safety training. So we looked at what they're doing currently with safety training. We did a series of focus groups to explore issues related to falls on work sites. We did a questionnaire of apprenticeship carpenters with 1,025 questionnaires at baseline. And then we did a residential worksite audits, almost 200 worksites that we visited to record fall safety. So the 72-item questionnaire that was developed for the study looked at a number of demographic factors, including their experience and what educational term the carpenter was in, their employer size, small, medium, or large. In general, we know that large employers are safer than the small and medium employers. We asked about falls from height in the past year, the history of training, knowledge of OSHA standards and guidelines. We asked about the safety climate at their employer, about the employer's perceived regard by the employer for their health and safety. And then we also asked about safety behaviors with specific questions about construction practices and how often things were done in a safe manner or unsafe manner at the work site. In addition to asking them what they did, we went out and watched what they did. So we developed a 52-item audit called the SAFER, the St. Louis Audit of Fall Risks. This is a 52-item observational audit. It had 9 separate domains that related to either different activities or different phases within the construction process. It was very simple, a dichotomous scoring for each item. And this was done by retired carpenters. So we had a couple of retired carpenters who were our research assistants. They were trained up in this audit, showed excellent inter-rater reliability in some testing. And just it works much better to have a carpenter go out on the audit rather than some pinhead from the university with a clipboard. So that it was a much better way to collect these data. And this audit is publicly available now. Results from phase one from the focus groups and the questionnaires, we found that apprentices work at heights very frequently early in their careers. They frequently perform tasks at the work site before they had received any training in how to do the task safely. We also found that they fall surprisingly often. So 16% at baseline reported having had a fall from height in the preceding year, and about half knew someone who had fallen from height in the preceding year. They fall off of every conceivable piece of equipment and structure on the work site, but the most common source of falls was ladders, and this then led to one of many sort of cognitive dissonances held by the carpenters, which are ladders are consistently ranked as one of the lowest risk items of equipment, but it's the leading source of falls. So from the audits, we found very similar findings. We saw a high prevalence of unsafe behaviors. So if we looked at the overall compliance with our audit items, it was around 59%. So the glass was slightly more than half full. Ladders and scaffolding were often set up and used incorrectly. For instance, ladders not being tied off or set at the wrong angle, or stepladders unopened stepladders leaned against the side of the building. Openings and leading edges were often unguarded. And trusses were rarely installed safely. It usually involves someone walking on the top plate, which is, you know, balancing on a 2-inch wide piece of wood some distance off the ground. So we also asked the apprentices what they liked and disliked about training. So their training preferences, they said they liked learning by doing. They wanted to practice tasks and skills in the shop, and they liked to hear real-world examples and stories. So what did they dislike? Sitting in a classroom, listening to lectures, and reading OSHA guidelines. And really, who can blame them? So when we move forward with what the apprentices were trying to tell us was, you should incorporate adult learning principles into education. We took this information and moved into phase two, which was working with the carpenter instructors to entirely revamp the fall prevention curriculum during the four-year apprenticeship. So we developed a curriculum, integrated it, and then monitoring it. And I say we here very loosely. It was really the instructors who did this. We provided them data. We fed them information about learning theory, but they really had to develop the curriculum, and they own the curriculum and continue to use it. So what did we do in the curriculum revision? So we spent a fair bit of time going over the data from the first phase of the study, and then the instructors came up with 39 new training objectives. Built a total of 17 hours of fall prevention training into the four-year apprenticeship, and rolled out the revised curriculum in the middle of 2007. So the training priorities were to focus on tasks that the apprentices performed early in their career, things that they had reported earlier that they did before they'd received training, and things that were reported that we'd seen on the worksite audits as unsafe. So priority tasks included ladder use, floor openings, truss setting, and scaffold use as the things we thought most likely to make a difference based on the needs assessment. Some of the changes we made was to use more props. So this was something the carpenters built as a training aid as part of this project. So it's an interior and part of an exterior of a house. So on the upper left, you see practice in scaffolding use. In the lower right, you see Vicky Cascudis, one of our colleagues, by a floor opening that has an appropriate guardrail. And then in the lower left, Todd, one of the instructors, is pointing out, you may not be able to see the orange line, but a leading edge guide and by an opening by some floor joists. We told more stories. So on the upper right is some materials from the laborers union, basically a roofer who suffered a significant injury from a fall. And it, this works better than statistics, we think. There was more of an emphasis on hands-on application of safe work methods, and particularly trying to integrate the safety into the skills training, and so that instead of being a separate activity, safety is, you know, step one or step two of a stepwise procedure for doing a construction procedure. And then had them practice active problem solving. So in the lower right, they're doing basically a photo sort of 12 photos and ranking them from high to low on danger and then discussing what, you know, why well, some things are more dangerous than others. Okay, so did any of this make any difference? So in phase three, we evaluated the effectiveness. We collected another 200 worksite audits and 960 questionnaires, and these were identical to the information that we collected at the baseline. So in the next few slides, blue is baseline, red is follow-up. The numbers are stratified by educational level. So these are stratified means by educational level, because there is a difference between what a first year and a third year apprentice knows. And what we're trying to do here is compare what a first year apprentice knew in 2007 versus a first year apprentice in 2009 and 2010, versus what a third year apprentice knew in 2007 versus what a third year apprentice knew in 2010. So it's a cross-sectional analysis trying to compare people who are at the same level of education but 2.5 years later. So this shows the timing of training. And so in the blue we see, for instance, for extension ladders at baseline on the far left, 43% said they'd used an extension, 43% said they'd received no train, they, sorry, 43% said they'd been trained before the first time they used the stepladder at work, whereas in the follow-up, 62% said they'd been trained in stepladder use before the first time they'd been asked to use a ladder at work. So in general, you see a higher proportion of people who said that they had received training before the first time they were asked to do a task at work, and with some of the bigger differences actually happening in the areas where we had targeted. So ladders, extension ladder and stepladder, and ladder jack, which is a type of scaffolding, unprotected edges, and then setting joists. So these were the things that we thought were most likely to have changed based on the curriculum changes. So next is knowledge of OSHA regulations. Some difference, not marked differences here in knowledge on OSHA regulations. Some items that are different. The hole diameter, which has to do with leading edges, some differences for extension ladder, but not real marked differences on knowledge. However, really big differences on behavior. And so this is the question that asked about reported crew behavior. So it was a series of 7 or 8 questions that said, how frequently do people use a step ladder that's just leaned against the wall? How frequently do people tie off the top of a ladder, et cetera? So there's really a marked difference. And again, this is the percentage reporting safe behavior, so we're still under 50% safe behavior in all the reported, but still pretty large differences from the baseline. So that's what they said they did. Now here's what we watched them do. So here's the follow-up audits compared to the baseline audits. Again, some pretty large differences in the audit. So overall score went from 59% to 75% compliance. And then here's a selection of the individual items that were on the audit. So guarded floor openings, controlled access zones, guardrail construction, window openings, truss chain setting. This has to do with moving trusses up by crane from the ground to the top, and someone has to disconnect the thing that just got swung up by the crane. Slide guards, step ladders, and ladder climbing. So pretty much across the board, we saw significant improvements in what was happening out at construction sites. Reported falls from height went down a little bit from 16% to 13%. This is The apprentice experienced themselves a fall from height in the past year, and a little drop in, I knew someone who fell from height, 51% to 44%. So we finished collecting these data this summer, so we've started doing the corrections for temporal trends. And so in the first analysis, they were adjusted for age, contractor size, residential construction work versus commercial construction work, and the apprentice to journeyman ratio, which in our previous workers turned out to be a significant predictor of fall. So the more old guys per young guy that's out on the work site, the safer things seem to be. So we still see then statistically significant improvements in post-intervention scores for knowledge, behavior, and safety climate. And we didn't get the adjusted falls ready in time for this conference. So our conclusions are that fall prevention curriculum revision was followed by measurable improvements in knowledge, self-reported fall safety behaviors, and observed behaviors on the work site. There was some evidence for specificity of effect. And that really in this, the carpenter instructors, again, were really integral to the design, the execution, and now the maintenance of this intervention. The study had a number of limitations. The study design limits the strength of the conclusions we can draw from this. It was a pre-post intervention study with no concurrent control group. This may or may not be generalizable to non-union settings because it was done in the context of a well-organized carpenter apprenticeship program that was run by the union and by the contractors. And then there are a number of other factors that could account for the improvements that we saw in fall prevention behaviors. So there was a downturn in new home construction during this time, which led to some change in the makeup of the workforce favoring older and more experienced carpenters. Again, to the best that we can, we're adjusting for that. And then there was an improvement in safety culture that occurred over this time as well. And so we're trying to decide, is that a confounder or is that a result of a project that had involved the contractors at the table from the beginning as well? So I think it's a result, but in our models, we're treating it as a confounder. So strengths of the study is that we measured a large sample of apprentices at various training stages. We had remarkably great participation. So the response rate on our survey was almost 99% by the apprentices. That's with 2,000 surveys with a 99% response rate. I doubt that will ever happen to me again in my career. And very high cooperation with the audits on the part of the contractors. We had a close collaboration between the apprenticeship program, the union, the home builders, and the research team. And we were able to demonstrate changes in observed behaviors at actual work sites, as well as using self-reported behaviors. So future directions here. We're doing a longer-term follow-up of the apprentice curriculum revision because we think that at 2.5 years we probably didn't hit the full effect. We're looking at trying to disseminate training to other settings, working through the National Home Builders Association and the National Carpenters Training Center. We're currently looking at on-the-job fall protection training. So what happens at school is only half the story. You know, they go out and they're mentored by foremen and older carpenters on the work site. So we're trying to look at the how good the toolbox talks and the interactions with the foreman are. And we've just started a new intervention study, which is training foremen to do a better job of recognizing fall hazards and also to do a better job communicating safety to their young workers. So giving more constructive feedback and basing this in part on the work that Peter Chen has done in Colorado. And then we're also trying to promote the use of commercially available fall prevention technology. There's a lot of inexpensive, useful devices out there that are not being used. And we've got several projects going trying to promote the local dissemination of this hardware out to the construction sites. So thank you very much for your attention. Right. It was impossible to blind them to the intervention because they knew what was going on, and you know they did a lot of work for us, and then a year later they came back and you know started doing some more work for us. So
the same group that did both.
There was some overlap. There were some new auditors, but there was some overlap with the original crew. So we went out and redid with people that were present at the beginning. And then the one new auditor that we brought in, we went in, we repeated the inter-rater reliability. And the audit was What was nice was it was very simple. It was a dichotomous audit, so it was either everything safe or one or more things seen unsafe. And so that didn't really require it didn't require scaling things. It was really a yes or no. You know, one ladder unsafely tied off. You know, that box got ticked. But you know, that is a potential bias if the observers, you know, there could have been some observer bias. The observers were not involved at all in the educational part, and so they were completely separate from the school. You know, we tried to keep them separate, but they're smart guys. I'm sure they figured out, you know, that we were hoping things would get better. Yeah. Right, so there was less buy-in from the old carpenters and the contractors at the outset, and so which is why we did our intervention in the apprenticeship school. And so the union came to us asking to do something with this, and they said, well, why do you want to start in the school? You know, what's happening on the job sites is more important. And the answer, 6 years ago, the answer was because no one's going to let me on their work site. So what was another nice thing through this project, it's led to the current intervention, which is training the crusty old foreman, and we have a lot more contractor buy-in than we did then. Right, and that clearly came out during the focus groups, and so the paper that Hester Lipscomb is the first author on here has some juicy quotes from the apprentices that speak exactly to this point. You know, it's they get trained in the right way, but then they go out at, you know, on the work site, and the guy says, "Well, I'm still alive, and I've been doing it this way for 30 years." So the phase we're in now is trying to correct that part of the issue. Right. So we did the pilot foreman training the first time earlier this week. So I'm eager to see changing the safety culture and also changing the way that the foremen communicate with the apprentices, which is currently is sort of like your stereotypical Marine drill sergeant, with less, you know, warm and fuzzies. So we're trying to get them to do a little better job of telling the apprentices what the right thing is to be doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That they're often not supervised.
Right. Right. So the people that we're working with now, they always have at least one journeyman on site. And so the current training is that we're doing the foreman is entirely based on fall hazard recognition and then communication and safety communication. So we're hoping that the foreman will do a better job of recognizing the hazards, but also effectively communicating them to the pups, which is, or the cubs, which is they call the young apprentices.
Well, I guess part of what I meant though was, you know, are there standards, and I don't mean that in a general practice sense, how close the supervision of a particular young worker is program? Should there be somebody there watching what they're doing for the first month and a half every time they went on a ladder, or is it just being on premises?
Yeah, so I would say it's somewhere between those two extremes. So and I think the supervision is probably, there's more attention probably given to the skills aspect, which is, you know, you measured it wrong, you cut it wrong, you nailed it up wrong, you know. So there's very close supervision for the quality aspect of the build. You're slowing us up, so what we're trying to encourage the foreman to do is give similar attention to the safety practices of the apprentices. But there's not someone shadowing them right at their elbow all day. But these are generally small work crews. So the usual size of the crew is four or five. So there's most commonly a foreman, one or two journeymen, and a couple of apprentices. So they're working in, you know, a space maybe twice the size of this. So they're pretty close by. Yeah.
It's been about 50 years since I supervised carpenters, but I was asked to do it as the site engineer on a project, construction project, on Mondays and Fridays when they hit carpenters either drunk or hungover. But one thing that struck me recently, I've been asked to investigate what happens with contractors on the sites for million-dollar homes. And what struck me in reading through the depositions of the various contractors and so on is the contempt that they have, the extent of the contempt they have for guidelines and regulations. The attitude is, we'll just keep doing what we're doing until the inspector comes around and corrects us. And if we're breaking a rule, rely on the inspector to tell us what rule we're breaking. That was particularly on the construction itself, not on the practices of construction. But there's a safety culture or non-culture which pervades the residential construction field. And what really struck me seeing it like a few days ago when I was doing my investigation on a specific case was how much more intensive that contempt was now.
So what you're
describing here is a very atypical situation from my perspective.
Right. Well, at least in St. Louis, I don't think we see anyone drunk on the work site or hungover. You know, the carpenters, to get in the apprenticeship, you have to have a graduate from high school, have a GED, pass a math test and a language test. So at least in the environment that I'm working in, I would say that's what we don't see the kind of thing that you're describing.
I think we are 1 minute over, so if anybody has a burning question for other presenters? If not, then we will call it close.